Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy. Hey folks, this is the Ages of Rock podcast, and as always, it's Dennis Talbot, Bill Algie, and Alan Tate here. This is episode number 184, and the Styx album Pieces of Eight had an anniversary a couple of days ago, so much to Bill's chagrin, we're going to review it. But before we do that, as always, we want to talk our normal nonsense and do our vinyl, reviews or what we found or... Well, I don't even think we have a real name for that segment, do we?
What Dennis found.
Yeah. The only music news off the top of my head that I can think of is James Durbin announced earlier this week that he was leaving Quiet Riot. And, of course, Quiet Riot just recorded an album with James Durbin. So Dizzy Pearl is back in the band. So,
and didn't James Durbin take over and re-record the record that the guy previously sang but quit or got fired before it came out?
Probably so.
I think so. I think he did.
That sounds correct.
And you remember that? Remember on the DVD, the Quiet Riot DVD, the family tree just got another fork. Yeah. Actually, this one forked back. And that, it kind of went around back again.
That tree's got all kinds of shit going on. Man, I'm telling you.
That makes the Kiss family tree look like it is not dysfunctional at all.
Like no tree.
I don't know if you guys also seen, too, I guess people were, you know, questioning what happened, you know, with Durbin leaving and everything and Jizzy coming back. And then they made the comment about, well, you know, Frankie, you haven't been showing up at your last few gigs and what have you. They've been playing without Frankie on some of these gigs.
What?
Yeah. So anyway, he actually butted in, you know, all caps. You don't know actually what's going on. And I don't have to explain to you why I'm not at these gigs, basically.
but I am because I'm mad now. So here's my response in all caps.
that or his keyboard's broken. He's just all caps all the time. So I don't know.
Hey, Frankie, you want to come on the show?
I would love to have Frankie.
I'm sure if we actually tried, we could get him on the show.
I love that. I like that DVD and the whole documentary. And you know, he even makes fun of it. You know, he's like, when he even says, you know, I was in and out of the band at one point. You know, the tree came out and he came back in. And that band's just been a complete, I mean, it's just, it's interesting history upon itself as far as the people that's come and gone and people that, you know, and that documentary, if you haven't got to see that yet, you need to watch it. It's really good. Was it, God, I can't even think of the name of it.
I knew that was going to happen. It's a great documentary. If I knew what it was called.
It's downstairs. It's
helpful. That's helpful.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, you can Google it while I talk real quick.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, hold on. Go ahead, I'll tell you what it is.
My favorite part of that documentary is when they're at the M3 Festival and Rat is playing and Carlos Cavosa is in Rat. And you basically see Frankie chasing Carlos down trying to get his attention. And it looked to me like Carlos wanted to be anywhere on the planet except right there.
Right.
Yeah, I remember I watched it, but it's been a while.
It's called Well, Now You're Here, There's No Way Back. And it came out in 2014.
Right.
The funniest thing was the guy who was their bass player, who I guess recorded, he didn't record with them, but he played the whole time with them. And these people, this one kid was getting a CD signed, and he grabbed it, and then the bass player started, he goes, was you on the album? He goes, no. And he goes, I don't want to. It was Chuck.
Chuck Wright.
Chuck Wright.
Chuck Wright recorded on. That's Chuck playing bass on Metal Health.
Right.
But the album that the guy had was a reissue or a reprint or something, and it didn't have his name in the credits, so he wouldn't let him sign it.
He wouldn't let us sign it.
I felt bad for Chuck, but that was pretty funny.
That was very funny. But the whole documentary is really kind of fun, and the fact of him and Rudy Rosario with those little dogs. It's like going, what the fuck is up with you, you rock stars and your little like chihuahuas and like the Paris Hilton dogs.
Your little yappy around. Dogs.
yippy dogs.
But anyway, no, I would like to have Frankie on. I think he'd be an interesting talk, you know, to sit around and talk and bullshit with him. But yeah, so Durbin's going to do his own thing, I guess. He's going to do his...
He's got some solo stuff he wants to do.
Yeah. I'm sure there's something else more involved in that, though. Why would you bail right before your album comes out, too? That's kind of odd. There's something...
It is what it is, you know. It's,
Who knows?
It's hard for families to stay together, let alone...
Oh, yeah.
You know, guys who really have no interest in... staying together when they don't like each other. Yeah.
Well, or they got different interests and they're moving in different directions. And
right.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, who knows?
Exactly.
Now, there is another album that we should have reviewed this week because it has, as a matter of fact, today as we're recording this, that? Woo!
Oh, you mean the Rush Signals Tour?
44 years ago today, September the 10th. 1975, Kiss Alive, and we should call it Kiss Gets to Live after this because they were tanking hard until that album came out.
That album, although I mean I've told this story a million times, but you know, walked into my friend's house, he's got that on a small 8-track tape player, and then the song was Hotter Than Hell, and I was like, "What is that? I got to get me some of that." And I ran to the store to buy that album and. It wasn't there, but got Destroyer instead. So that was, you know, Alive was that first. That was the first thing I ever heard from Kiss. I was like, I need that. That sounds good.
It's good stuff.
It is. It's really good.
Very good stuff.
And it's Dan the.
So now let's transition into what did Dennis find this week?
Oh, I
mean, what did Dennis really find? What did Dennis really find? We have to have some music for that, some kind of clever thing. What did Dennis find?
Well, I've seen this album a million times, Bob Wells. That's
because it's not very good.
It's got a hot chick on there. Actually, it's got two really good songs. The first songs on both sides are really good, Ebony Eyes and Sentimental Lady. I did the other day. I didn't even pull it out of this. I just kind of took – I was out in the garage. And I thought, I'm going to listen to it on Spotify.
He said first, he didn't pull it out.
That first
– his name's Max.
There's two really good songs on that album, and that's it. I got Kansas Left Overture. I know you're not a big, but Carry On Your Wayward Son. I mean, that's you gotta love that. That's got a great.
You
song.
Know what? I don't care what anybody says. In my opinion, Carry On Wayward Son is one of the most well-written songs, and that's one of those songs. I don't care if I'm in the car. You better shut up because I wanna. I gotta do my drum solo and I gotta sing along.
This is a rebuy. I actually bought this brand new. Actually, when I used to come get my braces adjusted in Evansville, my mom would bring me down. We go to Sears. The one weekend, the month before, I had bought New England, my first New England album. The second time we went down there, I bought this. Bought Supertramp, Breakfast in America. And I had that album for years and played. I like this album. This
one actually, of those records is a whole lot better than the other one.
The New England one is really good.
Supertramp record's a whole lot better than the other one.
It is a great album. I mean, there's so many good songs on here. It's just really good. But I picked it up for $5. You know, it was good. And then I bought Queen Heart.
Really?
Little Queen. Barracuda, you know, it's got Kick It Out, Treat Me Well.
Barracuda.
It's good stuff. That's good stuff. $6.
Me.
And it's good shape. I like Heart.
Bill's a Radio Hits Heart fan.
Yeah, yep. He is.
So is
Alan. I like
Dreamboat
Annie.
Too.
Dreamboat Annie, if you listen to that whole album, it's got some really good stuff on it.
Yeah.
Magic
Man. That's some great songs, but you mentioned one song and two others that nobody, I don't think anybody's ever heard of.
You've heard Treat Me Right. You've heard that one, and you've heard the other one.
I've heard Treat Me Right by Benatar, but not by Heart.
The other song that Bill mentioned.
Kick It Out. You've heard Kick It Out.
You've heard that, I'll guarantee you.
Yeah. They play that all the time.
Look It Up, you've heard it.
Yeah.
Okay. I've heard Lick It Up. Is that what you said?
No.
How about Rev It Up? No, wait, that's Vixen.
Rev It Up.
Yeah, wrong band.
There was something I was going to mention this week, and I don't remember what it was. Oh, I know what it was. I got to make a correction. Last week when we had
Chris Henderson
from Three Doors Down, my one question, like I said, I was in a flurry to, I was cooking chicken. I had 5 spatchcock chickens. I've said the word cock, yes.
What did I had you it say? Going. What kind of chick? What?
Spatchcock chicken.
That's now, you know about splat it out.
No.
Yeah.
You take a chicken and you cut the backbone out of it. You take about this much out of it. And then you cut that one bone in the middle. You flip it over and then you crack it down and lay it out flat. So you got a whole chicken that's laid out flat.
That's kind of what I said. I just didn't describe it as well as you.
But you got to cut that center backbone out.
Not
but anyway.
Push hard enough.
But anyway. You're not giving it.
Hey, did the backbone slide? That's what I want to know.
I was cooking it. So when I got on there, I was like going, and I was talking about Harper guitars because I'm getting one made from them. And I talked to him. I said, yeah, Jason's a real good guy. And then I sent him a link later on. And he's like going, yeah. He goes, I appreciate the thing. And he goes, but you know, my name's not Jason. It's Jacob. And I'm like going, did I say Jason? Did I? So anyway.
Dennis, Jacob, make a mistake on our show? Oh, no.
I'm going to correct Jacob Harper. And anyway,
Harper,
we're going to put a link.
HarperGuitars.com.
We're going to put a link up to it. And they've got a Facebook page. They've got a, if you want an actual handmade guitar, this isn't, you know, this has come out of a factory. These are handcrafted guitars. This is the guy you need to talk to. And they're not crazy expensive, too. I mean, you can buy a PRS. PRSs are more than some of these that he's making. You know, the one I'm getting is a fucking going to be an incredible guitar. And whenever I get it, you're going to see it on here. I'm going to show it off big time. But anyway, he does super duper quality work. Small business, works out of his garage or two-story garage behind his house. Can't say enough about the guy, and he's real good. I've emailed him a couple times. I'm actually getting different. He was going to put some Desmario pickups in it. Now I want to get Burst Bucker, but I wanted to make sure I could get him in that smoked kind of a blackish looking silver instead of bright, because everything's going to be real dark on this guitar. You know, it's going to be rock. So anyway, but you know, we've been talking back and forth, and he makes, and like I said, look him up on his page. He's made guitars for, like I said, he just made a twin set of guitars for, Billy Gibbons and, from ZZ Top and,
little band from Texas.
So he makes some, first class stuff for some first class people and really good stuff. So anyway, his name is Jacob. And I want to correct that. But anyway, we'll have our links there. And if you want to get in contact with him and see how long it'd be to get a guitar or get some prices, he actually has some demos that he has for sale on the website itself. But if you want custom made, that's the guy to go to. He's got certain shapes, and you just go from there. So anyway, that's what I needed to say.
Cool. You got anything special, Bill?
Well, shout out. I know he won't be listening, but a shout out to my boy, Alex. Yesterday, he started working for the Indiana Pacers. Internship.
I saw the post. Yeah.
And, but here's some cool stuff. So I texted him this afternoon and said, I hope you're having a great day at work, because he goes in at like 1 o'clock or whatever. They have events. So his job is to be at all the events that they have, and the Pacers event planning has to be there for anything happening in Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Concerts, whatever. So tonight, Backstreet Boys are there in concert, which my wife would really like to go to that. Anyway, so I said, he said, haven't been able to text much. Sorry, been super busy. Just made VIP packages for Backstreet. I met the band's tour manager, went over security and dressing room procedures, and I have an all-access pass. Like, that's pretty freaking cool.
So, Bill, you know who could probably get us some interviews lined up with some people coming through Indianapolis now.
And I said, hey, if they have a Bring Your Dad to Work Day, I'm in. Because there's some pretty good shows coming up there. Elton John's coming up there. And
tell them there's a 20 in there if he can get an interview for something.
But it's kind of funny.
Bring your dad's short, ball-headed friend to work.
It's pretty cool. So he's got like...
That's awesome.
Congratulations, Alex.
It is.
He worked 6 days this week because there's an event every day. So he's.
You know what though? Have they fixed that sound there in that place though?
It depends. It depends on where you sit. If you sit up high, it's horrible.
It's too bad. Yeah. Horrible.
Yep.
God, it's terrible.
That is true. Not as bad as it was when it first opened though. It was really, really bad.
I heard it was bad, and we were way top. We were a nosebleed for Van Halen, and you couldn't even tell what song they were playing. It was bouncing around so bad.
Yep.
But we got down lower, and it sounded great. So anyway.
Cool.
This bad design.
So I heard too that the Kiss show in Indy was 24,700 something or other is kind of the rumor I heard. Well, so
it's a darn shame they didn't have Ace. That's, maybe they could have filled that place up.
I know. You know, if they could have sold one more damn ticket. No, I think that's what somebody had sent that to me too, and it was packed, dude. It was pretty packed. So
did they end up, because when we talked to, when Alex told us, they had only had 23 or 22,000.
Yeah, so they must have sold the rest of them at the door.
So they did sold. So
sold a bunch. Yeah, I guess, because it was packed, man. You were there.
Oh, it was. Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah.
We were like all
around.
Yeah, it was bad. Yeah, vaping people all around. Oh, did you see? Oh, speaking of vaping, we talked about that last week.
Right.
Now they got people dying of vaping. Did you see that?
I've heard of... three or four deaths that were supposedly related.
I know that one guy was probably set up to do it because he vaped that so much at night. I thought he was going to explode.
But, you know, I've never vaped, so I don't know the ins and outs of it. I used to be a smoker, so I get it's a habit, you know. People do it to look cool or whatever. But my understanding is Jewel says that the people who have been sick and dying from the vaping have been using black market cartridges. So whether that's true or not, you know, they're immediately throwing in the let's blame someone else.
Oh, sure.
Here's an interesting. Did you hear that on the news this morning? They said Warwick County had their schools had a meeting last night, and he said that vaping was, skyrocketing as far as the kids use vapers. But they said, on top of that, they said they were almost to zero people smoking, and now smoking rates went up 70% in the Warwick County school systems.
Well, if they're considering vaping smoking.
No, they're considering the cigarettes. Now they're smoking cigarettes.
I don't know.
There's been like a boost in cigarettes. I don't know.
All I know is healthcare, anyway. From healthcare perspective.
Yeah, because you're...
Thank you very much. We appreciate the business.
Oh my God! Oh, jeez.
It's true. Yeah, I know.
That's a good point. I guess
never gonna run out of patients.
Well, nope. On that note, are we ready to start?
You were gonna talk about this.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Okay. Pieces of Eight was Styx's eighth studio album. Pieces of Eight. I guess that's why they named it that. I'm not sure. Right. I've got conflicting research. One source tells me that it came out September 1st of 1978. Another source says September 8th. So, you know, at 8 years old, I didn't have a clue who Styx was. Right. So one of those dates might be correct, but it came out in September of 78. It peaked at number 6 on the Billboard album chart. Blue Collar Man and Renegade helped propel the album to triple platinum status.
Right.
It was produced and recorded at the Paragon Studios in Chicago, along with previous Styx albums, and I believe that was the last Styx album that was recorded there. It was the recording engineer was Barry Mraz. The mix engineer was Rob Kingsland. It was mastered by Ted Jensen, and it was produced by Styx. And Dennis DeYoung explained on the In the Studio with Redbeard show that the theme of the album was devoted to an entire episode. Wait a second, let me read this correctly. The theme of the album, as Dennis DeYoung explained on In the Studio with Redbeard, which devoted an entire album to the episode to the album, get that right, was about not giving up your dreams just for the pursuit of money and material possessions, which is kind of what they did. Of course, true. I would have too, because that's a lot of money to make selling records.
Right, exactly.
You don't make that much money now.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
Well, you know, it's funny, because when I was doing research on this, you know, we've seen, have you guys seen Styx with Larry Gowan?
Yep. Yes. Multiple times. I'd never seen him with Dennis DeYoung.
I've seen Dennis DeYoung once and with Larry Gowan twice. As I was doing the research for this,
five times,
I found on YouTube, and it's in its entirety, Dennis DeYoung. It's something Dennis DeYoung, A Night of Stick Songs.
Yeah,
and I've seen it. It's like an hour and a half long, and it's really good.
Yeah, very good.
Now, some of the people who made comments on there that said the guy that does the Tommy Shaw songs sounds better than Tommy Shaw, but after I watched it, I disagree.
He looks like Tommy Shaw.
The guy that does the other guitar part looks like J.Y.
I know. He has it, and it's for a purpose.
But,
there's
a reason they look like that. The guy sounds good, and he sounds very similar to Tommy Shaw.
Right.
But, I didn't get the... That's the same argument. Does Arnell sound better than Steve Perry, or does this singer sound better than that? Fuck that. Yeah. Watch the show. Watch the show. Enjoy it for what it is. It'd be nice to see Styx get back together with Dennis DeYoung, but I don't ever see it happening.
Yeah, actually, Channel. Go ahead.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No. Channel 9 had a thing recently. They were selling that. That disc, that DVD, Night It with Dennis DeYoung, and he was actually on the not Channel 9 here, but on PBS.
Yeah,
and they were hawking that for that. But I tell you what, it's a recent show, and Dennis has a great voice, and that's not knocking the guy they got now. He's the only one I've ever seen, and he puts on a hell of a show too.
Oh yeah,
but like I said, I actually saw this concert where they played this in its entirety along with
Grand Illusion.
Yeah, Grand Illusion, and this one, and
that was a couple years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was down at the center. It was a good night. It was a good night of music, and but anyway, I like this album. I know Bill was a little bit hesitant,
I had it. I had the record back in the 70s, and I hadn't listened to it for a long time, and we can start reviewing stuff whenever you guys are ready. But I can tell you that, you're talking about the Dennis DeYoung and the new guy Gowan. Is it
Larry Gowan?
Larry, yeah. Lisa is a Dennis DeYoung fan,
right?
And not really much as a Styx fan as she is a Dennis DeYoung fan, because I took her to, she went with us cause we got tickets, and, she was like, if he starts playing some songs, she's leaving. That's what she said. I'm like, okay. But Dennis DeYoung, he played here at the hospice concert a couple years ago.
Right.
And man, it was spot on. He sounds really, really, really good, but yeah,
Dead Dogs Lie and be done with it. But
that ain't gonna happen.
There's a lot of bad. You talk about some. It's probably the band with the most bad blood.
No, I don't think so.
It's a lot.
There's a lot.
I'm gonna tell you a band that had bad blood. And that was the Monkees.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we should get Ken Mills on the show sometime to talk about the Monkees.
Yeah, I don't know.
I know Michael Nesmith is probably the bad. He was the bad guy, wasn't he?
That is my understanding.
Yeah, I've heard he's a train wreck.
Anyway, so let's talk about Pieces of Eight. Do you want to go by song by song, or what do you want to do?
Yeah,
let's just run through real quick.
Great White Hope.
All right. You know what I found interesting about that? They opened this record with a J.Y. scene.
I found that really interesting for Styx.
Exactly. But the thing is, and that's why I like about Styx, is you have three powerhouse lead singers in this band. J.Y. is not, he actually does two on this first side. Then you've got, Tommy Shaw. Then you got Dennis DeYoung. Those guys on their own can sing their asses off. So their band is, set up very well.
Oh, yeah.
They have an advantage.
Yeah,
exactly. They have a vocal advantage over most bands.
Oh, exactly.
I would agree. Yeah, they're a great band. They're a great band. They really are.
Right.
So you had a question about the Great White Hope, didn't you?
So, Bill and I had this little discussion. So Ron and I were talking about this the other day. So being in, and like I said, this show is never political, never anything, whatever. I think this is kind of interesting, though. if a band came out today in the social climate that we are at now, and your first song on your album is called The Great White Hope, you think it would stir up shit as far as in social media and
honestly,
stuff like that?
I think that before anybody stirred up any shit, they would look at the lyrics.
Do you see, I think people would just go, they're singing about the Great White Hope, and they wouldn't even listen to it and start bitching about it. That's just my thinking. I think that would be, because when we were listening to it the other night, Ron and I were listening to it, I was like going, you know, that song right now would not go, it would, you know, it's about a boxer, so it's not anything bad what they're singing. If Ted Nugent came out with a song today called The Great White Hope, people would not even, they wouldn't listen to it, wouldn't, they would like going, fucking Ted, that son of a bitch.
Well, Ted also has a history of being,
I know,
pretty,
but I'm just saying,
as far
that,
right as you can get.
That song title itself, I would think, would stir up, there would be some people who would not listen to the album and just go by the name of it and start bitching about it. That's just my own thing.
Well, there are people that do that to music in general.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They don't listen to it. But I just thought that was kind of fun. I was kind of, Bill and I mentioned it to Bill earlier, and I said I wanted to bring it up because I thought it was interesting. I wanted your take on it, too. I wanted to see, you know, what you thought. But I like the song, too. And like I say, J.Y. is, I mean, he's kicking it out. And like I said, I can't believe that Dennis DeYoung gave him a first note, you know, first song on an album. That's kind of cool. So,
well, I think he may have done that because this is supposedly a concept album, and that's how the concept flows.
Yeah. We won't Kilroy.
But if you look at some other information about the record, this was really that first, I believe what I read too was this is their first kind of venture into that concept album thing. Right. And, you know, from this point forward for many years, that's what it was. Right. You know, but that was also Dennis DeYoung's doing. That was his thing the entire time. Yeah.
You know, the whole time.
So that was his whole thing. So my take on The Great White Hope is it's a good song. Definitely a good lead off song. But yeah, it's fine. I'm sorry. I mean, I like the two hits off this song, this record. And other than that, it could just
fall
off the planet. I'm all right with it.
And thank you. Good night.
Yeah, I mean,
I think if Bill had his way, this episode would be done now.
I know what he's going to say about the next. I know what he's going to say about the next song.
Well, the next song is turd polish.
Well,
Great White Hope for me. I'm a sucker, with the exception of Lord of the Rings. I'm a sucker for those J.Y. songs.
Yeah,
because he sounds different. I don't know how to describe it, but the way he sings kind of has a little bit of a grit to it, where the other two guys have a smoothness to their,
more
their
slick
vocal style. Yeah.
Well, he's down an octave from everybody else, number one. And like you said, he's got that grainy, kind of gritty voice to it. Because like I said, you know, Tommy's way up here in the hemispheres. And then here's, you know, and then you got, you know, Dion, he's way up here in the hemispheres, smoothed out. But yeah, it's a good change.
I think you meant atmosphere.
What'd I say?
Hemisphere.
Could be.
That's a half a planet.
Okay. It's half a planet.
Whatever.
Way up here, half a planet away.
If you start
I'm going to be
hell
getting
you
text messages Thursday afternoon.
You know what?
This is my comic relief on Thursdays, because one of my friends that listens is always like, and I know where he's at in the show because, you know, yeah, he tacks along and points everything out and corrects us when we're wrong.
Yeah, whatever.
He hasn't had to correct us too much lately.
Well, there you go.
Until today, I'm sure he'll find something.
He'll find something. That's okay.
All right,
welcome to the show.
I was thinking of Rush, so anyway.
Song number two, I'm Okay, written by Dennis DeYoung and James Young. Lead vocal, Dennis DeYoung.
Well, it's okay.
That's pretty much what I thought.
I see. It is. there's that long. Is that the one that has the real long keyboard in the middle of it, to where he gets into the? Well,
the song is over 5.5 minutes long.
Yeah.
So probably
there's
so.
Like, because that's what even Rod goes. We were listening to it. We listened to it together, my buddy and I, and the other third, one of the fourths of the hounds.
Three fourths of the hounds.
One of the fourths of the hounds. But anyway, he was like going and goes, you know, Dennis has got, he must have, because he gave JY that first solo vocal. He must have just like, okay, this next song, I'm going to play the shit out of these keyboards. You know, I'm going to make up for it. It is a long song. It's like, good Lord, it's what, 8 minutes or 7 minutes long?
It's five minutes and 41 seconds.
It seemed like 8 minutes.
It's eight
it's
minutes.
A four and a half minute song.
It's 8 minutes
like...
in metric time.
There you go.
when it's a 4.5 minute song and it feels like 8 minutes.
That's my favorite song on the album. How's that?
Yeah, that's probably why I hit the skip button.
I didn't skip it. I listened to it.
Okay.
Alan?
It's okay.
It's okay. All right.
He nailed it. He knew 41 years later we were going to review it, and that was going to be our answer.
There you go.
Yep.
Well, it's I'm okay. But anyway, I'm okay with it.
Whatever. There you go. You can correct me now. All right. Song number three. You got anything else to say about that, Bill?
No.
No. I think Bill's dead.
He's not frozen.
Oh.
No.
All right. Moving along. Singing for the Day is the third song on this album. Written by Tommy Shaw, sung by Tommy Shaw. 4 minutes and 57 seconds long.
Yep. It's gold. Love it.
I like this song.
That's my second favorite, you know, second good song off this album. There's five out of the ten. There's five good, really good songs off this album.
I actually thought they released that. Did they not release that song? Or they play? I've seen them play that live, though.
Oh, yeah. I've seen them. You know, I've seen them play it. Well,
you're muted there, buddy. You're muted. Yeah, you're just muted as hell.
I know that. I know I was muted. You don't want.
I mean,
know
I seen it because I seen the concert in its entirety. But they've done that in other concerts.
Yeah, I've seen them do it before. Yeah. That's why
I'm pretty sure when I saw them in '97 with Dennis DeYoung, I am pretty sure they sang it that day.
Well, they do
because
that
because I never really was a big fan of that song.
No,
I mean, it's not a bad song. I just don't care for it.
It's kind of mellow, but it's good. I like it. I'm good with it.
Yeah, it was fine for me. I have no issue with it. Good song, I would say.
All right, The Message is the next song, and it's just a minute and an 8 second instrumental done by Dennis DeYoung.
The rest,
I don't care for instrumentals. So
yeah, the rest of this album, I can kind of expect. I can take a shit or do something. go do some, make a sandwich or, you know, whatever I got to do at that point.
Well, but Blue
Why
Collar
don't you
Man,
just go
great,
make a shit sandwich.
No, the rest of the half. We only got this and Lord of the Ring. So
you said the rest of this album.
You said the rest of this album.
I mean, the rest of the side of the album is what
I meant. That's not what you said.
Because I'm an album thing. No, the rest of the side of the album. So that's, you got the instrumental.
It's not a side to me. Is it a side to you, Alan? We're listening. Mm-hmm. We're using our.
I'm talking
about use my Spotify.
Our Apple Spotify.
Old school.
Our Appleify.
Old school. Anyway. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. It's just like I said, The Message, like I said, is a little interlude before it gets into the Lord of the Ring. And I'm not a big fan of it. It's not a bad song. It's just not, what did I say? Lords of the Ring. There you go.
It's Lords of the Ring. It was written by DeYoung and sang by James Young. JY. Yeah.
Why? He opens that side of the album and closes that side. Yeah. Interesting.
And then after that, he's done. You can't say nothing now, son of a bitch.
He's playing guitar and singing backups the rest
of the guitar
time.
And shut the fuck up.
Put your two songs on the front of the album and shut your pie hole.
Is that kind of like when on Kiss Dynasty when Gene's song didn't show up to the second side? Get your shit on the first side and be done with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I'm going to bring the shit.
Now, I will say this is the one James Young vocalized song that I don't like.
Right.
And I don't know if I don't like it just because DeYoung wrote it or because of the subject matter itself.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm not a Lord of the Rings guy movie-wise, and I guess when I just even see the Lords of the Ring, I was like, well, you know, I just shut down at that
title. Like, nope, got nothing.
Yeah, kind of like Great White Hope and people who think all musicians are racist.
Yeah. I mean, if there was a song that had the word Harry Potter in it, I'd be like going, it could be the best rock song ever. Like, I ain't fucking listening to it.
Well, do you listen to them Led Zeppelin songs that are inspired by the book The Hobbit?
I don't know. I'm not a big Led Zeppelin fan, so
ding,
there you
ding,
go.
Ding, me neither.
Ding, ding, ding.
Probably some Led Zeppelin.
I listen to like some Zeppelin, but not all of it.
I like the chicken singing the immigrant song better than anything I've heard this week.
That was the funniest damn thing.
The funniest thing was that some people were like, I saw these messages like going, I would be so pissed, but I can't stop laughing.
That's my business partner, Benny, is the one that said that.
But there's been some, I was looking at other people's like comments on other, wherever I shared it from. And the same thing, people were like going, I'd be so mad because I'm such a fan, but this is fucking funny. So anyway, it's good. It's awesome. Bill?
Go ahead.
You want to talk about the Lords of the Ring? You good?
Yeah.
Done. Okay.
You guys are doing a great job.
All right.
I'm just playing along.
All right, let's flip this album over and let's hit side two.
Thank you. At least it starts off well.
Yes. What a
Blue
great
Collar Man, Long Nights, written and sang by Tommy Shaw.
What a fucking great song.
They actually put the best side of this record on the B side. I mean, in general, if you listen to the record, in my opinion, when you listen to the record, the B side of this record is better than the A side.
This does have a better B side than the A side. I agree with you.
Really? No. He didn't want us to hear him again.
Yeah, he's
at least you know my mute button works. If they would take the last song on side two and replace it with one of the songs on side one, like Sing for the Day or The Great White Hope, that would make side two perfect.
Or Sing for the Day could be the last song, and that would be a great way to end.
That's what I said, either Sing for the Day or Great White Hope.
Yeah, I agree.
It's an Aku Aku song is just a piece of shit. I mean, it's an absolute turd and a fucking...
I'm not sure which language it is, but that is some foreign language for turd polish. All right, but anyway, Blue Collar Man, Long Nights, great song.
Great song.
I think they've probably done this song, even the Dennis DeYoung A Night of Sticks songs. This is in that set list.
It's a fun one to play on guitar. I love playing this on guitar. I just never played in a band with a keyboard where we could actually pull it off, but I love playing the guitar parts in this thing. It's really fun. And just a great Tommy Shaw. I mean, it gets me. It's one of those anthem thumpers.
You need a keyboard player in the Hounds then.
No, we don't. No, we don't work with keyboard players. We all
you have a bass player though, don't you?
The only reason we play with drummers is because somebody's got to keep the beat.
Keyboard player. No,
not anymore. You just get a machine.
That's true. Well,
Vinnie Vincent would approve.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right. So anyway, great song. And like I said, I don't know what they were thinking about whenever they put this album together. Wouldn't you thought that would have been like, I would have put that on the first side.
Well, I'm sure that
it was a concept album.
Between the concept and their eight albums in, egos are starting to take their tolls and everything. Because as we know, with the Mr. Roboto and all of that stuff, there was a lot of discontent in the band.
That's true.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the Grand Illusion before this and this album, those things weren't coming to the surface and.
Right.
Song order may have had a role to play that I'm going to leave the band if I don't get,
right.
Like
that's
Peter
true.
Chris, if I don't get two songs.
Grand Illusion was after this, though, right?
Nope. Grand Illusion was before.
No, before.
1977.
It was the album before.
Oh.
Yeah. I thought this album was a lot earlier,
a quarter,
too.
Bill. I
would have bet you this would have been
Equinox and before the Grand Illusion.
I would have thought that too. And that's what the concert I saw. It was a Grand Illusion and this album was the two that they played back to back live in its entirety.
Well, I saw the Grand Illusion tour.
Right.
And it was really, really good.
It was good.
And
all right.
Yeah. Anyway.
people. All right, so we all agree that Blue Collar Man just basically rips
that. It's hard not to give that song props.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's a staple in classic rock music. It's a staple in their set list. All right, number seven on this album, Queen of Spades, written by Dennis DeYoung and James Young, and lead vocal by Dennis DeYoung.
Love this song.
This one is, I don't love the song, but I don't hate it. It's a decent song, but
it reminds
5 minutes and 38 seconds, too long.
It's a classic. It is a classic stick song. You got to give it that.
Oh yes, it's.
It has every part.
You can't get a song to sound any more sticks than this.
Exactly. I mean, I just love it. I mean, you got the slower parts, you got the heavy parts. You know, you got the everybody singing. I mean, it is a classic stick song. It's hard to not like that song, but it's. You know, there again, second side's just coming in and just mowing down.
Much better than the first side. Yep.
I agree. Exactly. All right.
Yep.
Song number eight, Renegade, written and sang by Tommy Shaw. Now, this one here, I remember when I was a kid, my cousin got it on 45. Right. And he called me and he's like, "You got to come over. This is the greatest thing ever." You know, so. But yeah, I think Renegade is one of my top five stick songs all over.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I agree.
My cousin who I was telling you about last week that had the Powerage the AC/DC 8-track. He had one of these, I don't know, K-Tel, whatever it was, like multiple ones. But Renegade was on track 3, and I'm telling you what, track 3 got played a lot. You know, it went to 4. We're going back to 3 again because we want to hear Renegade again. So, yeah, you know, it was one of those things. That's a great song. I mean, you can't not do this when it's on. It's a great song. Like I said, we're plowing through the second side, and it's fucking awesome.
Well, it's because the comments are the same. It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's
okay. Until we get to number 10.
Yeah. All right.
Song number 9, Pieces of Eight, written and sang by Dennis DeYoung.
Slow down, but it's still good.
I like this one better than Queen of Spades. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you like it better than Queen of Spades?
I did. Yeah. Huh.
I like it.
Maybe I'll go back and listen to the album again tomorrow.
Or I like it. I like it as much. Not quite as much because I like, for some reason, the Queen of Spades has always kind of been a favorite of mine. But.
Well, Pieces of Eight is under 5 minutes, so you know.
So, you don't lose that your attention. Like, where are we? Oh, I'm listening to a song. Yeah, that's right. This has been over 3 minutes.
The last song lost my attention.
Well,
yeah, that pretty good. Actually, Piece of Eight is not a bad song, and then it gets to that last song, and it's like, okay.
Okay, now, what I'm going to say about Aku, to me, that is Styx's version of Ace Frehley's The Acorn is Spinning. What a terrible fucking song.
And you know, the thing is, on Spotify, I was listening to it yesterday on Spotify, and like when the song ends, the actual, there's like another minute of just silence. I mean, it's like, just fucking cut it off. I mean, it already sucks bad enough. Just cut the shit off. Like, why make my fucking machine go? I don't know if the silence is golden or what's going on.
Well, they leave that for you, so you can kind of go, what the hell just happened?
You know, I just noticed something about this album, and here's my little thing going on. So this was released from A&M Records.
Yep.
Do you know what the A stands for? I learned it this week.
Asshole.
Artist.
No. He was half of the person that owned this company. Herb Albert.
Oh, that makes sense. And that makes sense about the horn and
the little trombone.
Yeah,
Or trumpet. Yeah. So anyway, Herb Albert was the A of the M. And I don't know. They said who the M was. I was listening to
Mancini.
No, it wasn't Henry Mancini. It wouldn't be. No, it wouldn't be that. I'll find out who that is. I'll tell you next week.
Ronnie Montrose.
But we were. But no, I was listening to. I always listen on the weekends when we're driving somewhere. The 80s channel on Spotify has all the original VJs, and they were talking about Herb Albert had a hit back then, and he was the A in the A&M, you know, everything. But
that's pretty cool.
Here's another thing I want to real
good
quick.
Trivia. I hope you're right on that, because otherwise someone's going to tell
you. No, I am very correct, because you know who told me that? Nina Blackwood. She just came in from smoking 5 cigarettes, and then she's telling us now about her Albert and his... Every time we get on her...
Going to hell,
They go through all these fucking VJs, and every time Nina comes on, Kelly's like going, her voice just sounds so ragged.
I'm going to tell you, from the 80s to now... If you didn't know it was her, you would not recognize that as being Nina Blackwood.
You don't even recognize her voice hardly anymore.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Like, it's just like that. And she's just like 1 minute away from...
Wow. Yeah. On that note, ought to wrap up.
What's the South Park guy?
The
vibrating
box. Guy's name.
You know what I'm
talking about. Shoot us.
Is there anybody we haven't
message?
Left? We haven't
anyway.
I like
all the original VJs. Listen to that. Anyway,
love
this album.
Pieces of Eight. Tell us what you think. Do you like the album? Do you not like the album? Do you think our opinions are spot on, or Dennis is full of shit?
Dennis DeYoung's full of shit.
Some Dennis that we know is full of shit.
And for the record, Dennis is the one that picked this record for us to review.
No, I picked it.
Oh, that's right. You did.
I told you that in that text
you
message.
You did.
He was busting Dennis's balls, and I'm like, I got you back, D. I got you back.
Here's what's funny. So anyway, Bill was bitching about having to review this album. So I go, well, look. So the day after Signals came out, Rush Signals came out. And I'm like, we ought to review this record. And Alan sent me the little turd emblem. And then I saw, like, the next day, it was the 40th, what, the 44th anniversary, or the 40th
yeah,
or 44th of the Kiss Alive. I'm like, going, that's the one we should have been talking about, but we already.
Yeah. Well, we already there really isn't a lot to talk about. There really isn't. This is pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
Kiss Alive record's pretty easy.
Good.
Put it down. There's not a bad song on there, man.
So, Kiss had to cancel one of their shows. And of course, somebody said the tape machine broke.
They rescheduled 2 shows.
I know,
yeah,
but they
rescheduled.
It said the tape machine broke. Somebody commented on there.
Yeah, that's
fine. So I'll have it up and running for the next one. So
anyway. But the thing is that show is like September 20th, so it's
I know.
2 weeks away still, or 10 I days know. Away now. By now,
you know what? The only thing on these things were when you're buying tickets a long time in advance, and some of these people are flying in. You know, we're flying in. You know, that sucks when shit like that happens.
Wait,
you know,
that's one nice thing about buying, and it sucks that you have to do that, but buying travel insurance for stuff like that,
right.
You know, at least you have that option now. Back in the day, if you bought a ticket, they didn't refund your money for an airplane ticket, or if you missed your flight, fuck you.
Too bad.
Yeah.
But if you do, will they do that for an airline ticket? If you take the insurance, if your event gets canceled,
you can buy travel insurance in case you can't make the flight or you cancel or whatever.
I knew you could do it for hurricanes and shit like that, but you could do it for an event cancel.
I bought it for Noah's.
When you buy travel insurance, you can cancel for any reason.
Yeah, really? I did not know.
And it's not bad. Like, so I bought it for Noah's. A flight home for Thanksgiving, and it was $22.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
For $22, you can secure. Yeah, okay, I'll take that because it's in November, and God only knows what'll happen. And
you know, because that's what you know. I mean, that happened to us, like I said, with that Foo Fighter deal. But unfortunately, we had bought. You know, tried to get the cheaper
hotel.
That
was just rooms. Yeah.
But the whole point is, you know, that was $400 between the two of us. That was $400, almost $500 in rooms that we spent that we would have actually drove back home that night.
But one of us had more fun than the other.
I had a great time.
And on that note,
I don't know what you're talking about.
We were talking about the Styx Pieces of Eight album.
All right.
Y'all know the routine. Go to agesofrock.com. Check us out on Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, Player.fm, all of the other places you can find us. Check us out on social media. If you haven't liked us on Facebook and Twitter yet, please do so.
Who cares?
Yeah,
well,
Twitter.
Pretty much.
Twitter.
Well,
go look at Randy.
Our Twitter gets one post a week.
Go to Randy Quaid's Twitter account. and look at his videos.
So that has absolutely nothing to do with the show.
No, what are you talking about?
Randy Quaid has lost his fucking mind.
Yeah, and look at his Twitter.
He never had a mind. All right, but that was a swerve.
And anyway,
thanks for sticking us out, Alan.
On that note, peace out, folks.
Love y'all.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.